topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
Hey everyone, it's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of whose program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
The T-Ball program usually heard at this time will be momentarily delayed for a special broadcast.
Prepare yourself for a trip through time, space, and the reality that you have known. When you enter into Willow's world. Willow Andreasen brings you the thought-provoking dialogue and news from around the world that shows your mind has no limitations. Take it away, Willow.
Good afternoon and welcome from a beautiful United Kingdom. My name is Willow Andreasen, also known as Surrey Sunflower, on the Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com chat room. And this is the Monday, the 26th of December, 2022 edition of Willow's World. It's Boxing Day over here in the UK, which means it's a holiday still. I just hope that everybody around the world or everybody who's listening had a good Christmas. A settled Christmas. I came down with this, what you could hear on Christmas Eve. So it started coming out properly on Christmas Day. So there you go. But anyway, it's a cold. It's a cold. It's nothing else. It's nothing more serious than that. It's a cold. But again, I hope everyone had a great Christmas. And I hope that you managed to enjoy some cheer, enjoy some love, enjoy some joy, which seems to have been lacking in certain locations. And I will say again, it's best to find some kind of balance, folks. There is good out there, even if it doesn't seem like it. There is good out there to be found. There is still much joy to be savoured in the world. By all means, it's perfectly okay to go sticking one's head down the rabbit hole and investigating, but it is also equally as important to get your head out of that rabbit hole every so often, because otherwise you might end up with it being stuck down there permanently and all you will see is darkness. So it is imperative to ensure that balance between the endeavours of research and living the joys of life, it is absolutely essential that that balance is retained. Now, before I get started with telling you what's happening on today's show, I just want to say a big, big thank you to all the hosts who have been covering, who have been on today, and covering everything. Well, indeed, a big, big thank you to all the hosts for everything you all do. It's truly appreciated. Indeed, to the producers and moderators who sometimes have a few challenges on their hands to navigate, but they, you have to excuse me. I'm going to have to mute every so often just to stop and blow my nose, because it's, a little bit congested, so I apologise. But again, a big, big thank you to the producers and moderators who sometimes have a few challenges to sort, but they do so promptly and cheerfully as well. Also, huge outpourings of gratitude as well, and lots of love and hugs, and so much more to the team that I'm humbled and honoured to be a part of, a team that bends over backwards and beyond and just that little bit more to ensure that this station remains on air for as close to 24/7 as we can get it, which is most of the time. What I say in sickness and in health applies. You're listening to it right now. We're a dedicated bunch. And we literally drag ourselves out of our sick beds for this station to ensure that it remains on air, folks. And I'm not kidding about that. Yeah, we enjoy doing this. It's so important to us to keep this vessel of free speech afloat upon that deepening and darkening quagmire that is increased censorship. And we are going to keep doing it. Also, huge outpourings of gratitude as well, and lots of love and hugs and kisses to Liz Ringley, who continues to represent so much to the station, and to the individual whose prescience, whose vision, whose drive convinced him it was a necessity to construct this vehicle, which took its maiden journey coming up to 12 years ago. Now, its inaugural show happened on New Year's Day 2011. So, yeah, we'll be celebrating, of course, this weekend coming up. Will be the starting at 8 p.m. Eastern on New Year's Eve, which is 1 o'clock in the morning for us here in the UK. We'll be starting its New Year's Eve party, and then that will be segueing into the station's birthday party as well. So, don't know what's going to happen, have no idea. It goes where it needs to go. But also huge outpourings of gratitude as well for the individual whose prescience, whose vision, whose drive convinced him it was a necessity to construct this vessel, which took its maiden journey, as mentioned, coming up to 12 years ago. And it was his determination that individuals would be able to navigate the times we are currently facing as fearlessly and as self-sufficiently as possible. Excuse me a moment if you could hear anything. I've got to just, my nose is running. I don't need to blow it just yet, but I'll probably need to in a minute. But yeah, it was his intention that listeners should be able to navigate these times as fearlessly and as self-sufficiently as possible. And in those near 12 years, the station has become a global family of like-minded souls of kindred spirits who have gravitated towards each other, indeed being reunited with each other as well in certain instances as a result of this amazing gift of a station. And we miss him every single day. Huge outpourings of gratitude to Mike Ringley, to Nighthawk, for this amazing gift of a station. Also much missed as well, and I'm looking at his photographs to say this as well, huge outpourings of gratitude and lots of love and hugs and kisses to my late other half, Briarios, for everything that he continues to represent in my life and always will. Thank you very, very much indeed, my love. And also huge outpourings of gratitude as well, and lots of love and hugs to some very, very special loved ones in my life. They know exactly who they are. And to the musician, I hope you had a great Christmas. I really hope you did. And before I say a big, big thank you to amazing listeners, I just want to mention the memory of somebody who is unrelated to the station, other than by the fact that I'm related to him. Today, of course, I've talked about it on the show before, my grandfather passed away 27 years ago today. and the show will have been over for about 53 minutes when that particular time is reached, because that's the time he passed away. He was diagnosed with cancer on the Christmas Eve of 1995, and he was dead 2 days later. So evidently, the, as I said on my Facebook page, and I've said it many times before, and indeed, that's exactly what I wrote on the card with the flowers, that the angels decided they were missing one of their own over Christmas, so they returned for him. And yeah, I miss him very, very much indeed. This day is always a huge challenge to me, and will be for the rest of my days, no doubt. But I'm going to carry on. And last but not least, folks, huge outpourings of gratitude to amazing listeners. We do this for you. We wouldn't be able to do this without you either, folks. Totally symbiotic relationship. It's your kindness, your love, your support, your generosity that enables us to continue providing you with such a wide variety of shows, hosted by fantastic individuals from all around the world on a close to 24/7 basis. It's that same kindness, that same love, that same support that enables us to continue doing so on a commercial-free basis. Yep, you'll hear promotions here at the station during the promotion breaks, but yeah, they have to do with the station itself. They're the only ones I hear nowadays are to do with the station. The hosts will promote their own wares, but that's perfectly fine. The promo slots are generally restricted to station business only. And we are also able to provide you with the archives for free as well as a result of your kindness and your generosity. And we do not take your kindness and generosity for granted, folks. We really don't. We really don't. We appreciate just how challenging this time of year is for so, so many. And you're supporting us through these times. For that, we are immensely grateful. And I would like to say on behalf of everybody here at the station, I hope that you can feel those waves of gratitude enveloping you as I speak, or attempt to speak. So a big, big thank you to everyone for your continued support. Thank you very, very much indeed. I sound fine? I don't think so. I don't think I do. I certainly don't feel it. But it's a nice thing to say, Patrick. Thank you. As I mentioned, we are entirely listen supported. If you'd like to help us out and you're not sure how, what I recommend you do is you visit our website, which you can reach using one of two URLs. It's either www.revolution.radio or www.freedomslips.com. Either or takes you to the exact same location that you arrive. And you'll arrive upon this amazing website of ours, which has been established and lovely maintained by the amazing Monster 383. So when you see him in the chat room, and indeed my fellow managers as well, folks, please say a big, big thank you to them, because they worked really hard. And I mean, they were even doing so over Christmas Day. Excuse me. They were even doing so over Christmas Day, the techs. They were doing that too. There's no day off. There really isn't. Not that we seek one, but there's no day off. And again, if you'd like to support us, what you do is you visit the donations option, which is 6 for long on the nav bar. The nav bar, of course, is the static bar of options that remains there sedentary at the top of the home page. Excuse me, I'm just going to have to blow my nose. I'm going to mute. Hold on. That's not too bad, waiting 14 minutes in anyway. That's not bad at all. Yeah, it's donations if you'd like to help us out. If you click on that, it'll open up in a new tab for you, and you can, let's say, details all the methods, bar one of supporting the station. We've got Patreon, we've got Donor Box, we've got Direct Payment North America only. All three have monthly support options available with them. And you need to be a patron in order to do so on Patreon, by the way. And a big, big thanks to our patrons, you lovely people, you. But again, a big, big thank you to you all. That's where you can become a patron, either by clicking on this option or returning to the homepage, where you'll find it sitting pretty in pink. sitting pretty in pink there at the top of the page if you've got a light background, or if you've got a green background. It's because you've got the dark background like I have. Sorry, it's going to be a long show, folks. If I start veering off, you understand why. This is really, really kicking my butt. I'll do the best I can. You can use DonorBox as well. That's the alternative to PayPal. It's international in scope. It's easy to use. Again, you can set up something for regular monthly support, or you can use it whenever you are able. Direct payment North America only applies if you happen to live in the US or Canada and have a credit or debit card. Again, you can set up something for regular monthly support. You'll use it whenever you are able to use it. Cryptocurrency, we accept three different types, folk. They are Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Bitcoin Cash. I'll repeat those, Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Bitcoin Cash. There are QR codes on the screen. You point your devices at them, and you do your thing. And last but not least, folks, are the snail mail details. Yep, we still accept checks or money orders, and they are to be made payable to Revolution Radio. That's two separate words. Revolution spelt R-E-V-O-L-U-T-I-O-N. I'll repeat that. It's R-E-V-O-L-U-T-I-O-N. And radio is spelt R-A-D-I-O. I'll repeat that as well. It's R-A-D-I-O. And then they are to be mailed to the wonderful lady horse, Terry Ackerman. Terry spelt T-E-R-R-Y. I'll repeat that. T-E-R-R-Y. And Ackerman is spelt A-C-K-E-R-M-A-N. I'll repeat that as well. It's A-C-K-E-R-M-A-N. I have shoveled a load of tiger balm up my nose before this, so hopefully I can get the ends pronounced properly anyway. And then they are to be sent to Terry at 1793, that's 1793 North Eden. Eden spelled E-D-O-N Road. And that's Allen, A-L-L-E-N, Michigan, M-I, 49227. So checks or money orders made payable to Revolution Radio are then to be mailed to the wonderful lady horse, Terry Ackerman, at 1793 North Eden Road. That's Allen, Michigan, 49227. Those details are also found at the bottom of the homepage as well. Thank you, OL. Thank you. Thank you very much indeed. Yeah, it's found at the bottom of the page, but also you can advertise on the station's website, folks. So if you've got a product or company you'd like to get out there, you know, for the new year, but cost is an issue right now. You want it to be seen by plenty. We do have plenty visiting the website, folks, using either or the URLs. We have plenty visiting. So if you can advertise on the station's website, that's for $25 a month. And for further details, you need to contact the station GM himself, Amad Painter, using the following email address, which is themadpainter13@yahoo.com. That's themadpainter13@yahoo.com. I'll spell out that first segment for you. It's themadpainter13. And I'll repeat that. It's themadpainter13@yahoo.com. All lowercase in format, by the way. Hopefully I don't sound too gungy. I can hear it. Hopefully nobody else can. I can hear it in the background. You know, my nose just sort of sounds like a suction pipe. Anyway, carrying on. We've also got dedicated call to listen numbers for both studios, folks. The numbers you just call, you just listen. You don't have to participate. You don't have to speak. But we heartily recommend that you speak to your cell phone and landline service providers, because there are costs involved with calling them. Call them first. Check that out. We don't want you getting any nasty shocks on your bills. But once you've done so and you're happy with what you've been told, dedicated call to listen number for Studio A is 518-906-1839. I'll repeat that. It's 518-906-1839. And the dedicated call to listen number for Studio B is 518-906-1859. I'll repeat that for Studio B. It's 518-906-1859. Don't forget to call your cell phone landline service providers first to check costs, okay? Imperative you do that. Once you've done so, once you're happy, then you can call them. And last but not least, folks, are the archives. They're free to access, will be for the foreseeable, very likely a permanent arrangement as well. So you can reach the archives either by clicking third along in the nav bar, which is the archives option. You can click on that, that'll open up in a new tab for you. Or go direct to its URL, which is www.revolutionradioarchives.com. That's www.revolutionradioarchives.com. Excuse me a minute, I've just got to wipe my nose. And the details you need to access the wonders that await you within are the username and the password, both of which are lowercase and case-sensitive in format. The username is Rev Radio. That's Rev Radio. I'll spell that for you. It's R-E-V-R-A-D-I-O. And I'll repeat that. It's R-E-V-R-A-D-I-O. And the password is Rocks! Exclamation mark. That's Rocks! Exclamation mark. I'll spell that for you. It's R-O-C-K-S! Exclamation mark. And I'll repeat that. It's R-O-C-K-S exclamation mark. Don't forget that exclamation mark, folks, because without it, you won't be able to get in. You won't be able to get in, folks, without it. But again, a big, big thank you to everyone for your continued support. Truly, truly appreciated indeed. Thank you very, very much for being you. So what's happening on today's show? Well, first I'm just going to mute again because my nose is needing... It's only been about 5 minutes since the last time. Hold on a moment. For pity's sake. So yeah, what's happening on today? Well, I'm going to wander into the chat room shortly to say a big hello to everybody in there, make sure everybody is okay. And then a slight variation from the usual format because I'm not really sure. I think there might be some geek headlines from the Nexus of Nerdom that is Io9 Gizmodo today. But I thought, you know what, I'm just going to vary it today. If I've got time for it at the end, I will do. But it's still part of the Christmas holidays over here in the UK. So I thought I'd still do something a little bit festive. So three articles today. In the Monday afternoon geek out from The Guardian, we're journeying to the world of television to learn how the late, great Raymond Briggs' heartwarming and heartbreaking televisual iteration of his 1978 illustrated children's book, The Snowman, changed Christmas viewing around the world forever. From the Den of Geek, we're remaining in the world of television to savour a review of comedians Guz Khan's and James A. Acaster's upcoming documentary, The Unofficial Science of Home Alone. And finally, from Kotaku, we're settling into the world of gaming to enjoy Kotaku's examination of the 10 most inventive and beautiful uses of snow in video games. Different from the one I've shared before, it's actually a new one, so I'm looking forward to seeing that one. So the second hour is commencing with a selection of poetry focusing on the future in Willow's pep talk segment. It's a brief one today, because there's only five of them in the particular selection, so I thought, you know, I'd just read them out today. After which the doors are open to the cozy nook that is the Poetry Corner. Now we're returning to the worlds of 20th and 21st century American poetry for a study of one of its most explorative of literary talents. Born in 1956, she was one of seven children born to an airplane mechanic and homemaker mother. Her father was a mechanic. The family relocated to Kentucky during her childhood. She studied for her Bachelor of Arts degree at Transylvanian University in Lexington, Kentucky. And gained her Master's of Fine Arts qualification from Antioch University in Los Angeles. An academician, author and a collaborator with visual artists, her first collection of poetry, Sacrifice, was published in 1997. She's developed and taught creative writing programs for children, senior citizens, prisoners and residents of homeless shelters for women and children. She's taught at various higher educational establishments, such as the University of Southern California, and Sichuan University in China. The recipient of various awards and honours over the course of her career. The notable works include her two Sylvia's Press Chapbook Prize winning collection of poetry celebrating our planet, published in 2014 and entitled Simply Earth. She was born in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Her name is Cecilia Wallach, and that's how it's pronounced. I check the pronunciation as I always do. And the remainder of the show remains in the Poetry Corner for the next instalment of Willow's prosaic preoccupations. Now, today's first article journeys through seven books, which, whilst considered hard to read, are well worth reading through to the end. And we're concluding today's prosaic pondering with a fun look at the pun fests that are the names of certain London roads. So anyway, going to wander into the chat room now. Lot to do. Wander into the chat room, say a big hello to everybody in there, make sure everybody is okay. Let's see who's in. Let's have a look and see who is in the chat room. Fact or Theory Live is in. Stephen Crawford. Stephen Crawford, of course, is the host of the show of the same name, which is on this studio on Thursdays at 6 p.m. Eastern. And Amiga Logos is in as well. Lovely Amiga Logos has said some rather lovely things in there. Let Me Out is in as well as wonderful manager that is Pat Rabbit. Patrick, of course, is the host of Not for Public Consumption, which is on Thursdays on Studio B at midday Eastern. Mace 139 is in as well. I'm going to the top of the hour. Let's see who else is in. Let's see who else. The Mechanic is in. The Mechanic, of course, is one of our fine hosts as well. He is on the studio three times a week. He is on Mondays at 2 a.m. Eastern, so he's on a bit earlier today with an open round table. He'll be seeing you Thursday at midnight Eastern with chairing the High Council round table. And if time allows, he's on Thursdays at 4 p.m. Eastern with the Common Denominator. Let's see who else is in as well. In the Kitchen is in as well as Lavender Stream. Lavender Stream, of course, is Zoe. Zoe is the host of From Z to Infinity, which is on this studio on Wednesdays at 6 a.m. Eastern. Another fabulous host of ours, Mona, is in the chat room as well. She is the host of Adventures of a Feral Hippie, which is on weekday afternoons at 2 p.m. Eastern on Studio B. So she's on right now over the other side of the studio wall. I'm going up to the top of the hour. I've gone to the top of the hour. But if you want to come and join us in the chat room, folks, please do. It'd be good to see you in there. The more, the merrier. It'll be good to see you. So, slightly different today. I'm going to be forsaking the... Well, not forsaking permanently. The Geek Headlines. Going to be doing something a little bit different. These articles are lengthier, and I thought, you know what, it's still the Christmas holidays over here. I'm going to do something festive. Even if I don't sound festive, I'm going to blooming well do something festive. So, it's, excuse me while I just blow my nose a moment, hold on. Good grief. I've got three articles, as I mentioned. The first one, if I do have time for the geek headlines, I'll go back to it at the end of the geek out, if I do. But the first article is from The Guardian, authored by Stuart Heritage, posted up on the 10th of August this year, which made me think he's a bit early for that, but that was because Raymond Briggs died in August. And it's headlined, We'll Still Be Watching in 50 Years, so how Raymond Briggs is the Snowman changed Christmas. So when the film version of Briggs' melancholy masterpiece was first screened in 1982, I remember watching it with my brother and my sister, and in fact it was the last thing that my sister and I watched together over Christmas on this very day, 27 years ago actually. The very last Christmassy thing we watched together. But, yeah, Britain's clutched at their hearts where it has stayed ever since. And, yeah, Raymond Briggs died in earlier this year, at the age of 88. Some people are so famous for so long that they become enmeshed in all our lives. Raymond Briggs, who died on Tuesday, which was back on, the 9th of August he died, was one of those people. Briggs illustrated his first book, Ruth Manning Sanders' Peter and the Piskies, Cornish Folk and Fairy Tales, 64 years ago, and quickly set about creating a string of classic books, many shot through with his trademark melancholy. Fungus the Bogeyman revelled in a quiet British mundanity. When the Wind Blows was terrifying enough to scar an entire generation emotionally, and Ethel and Ernest managed to convey the small hopes and thwarted ambitions of mid-20th century life in a way that would put to shame many important authors covering the same period. And yet, despite this breathtaking output, The Snowman looks set to be Briggs' defining work. First published in 1978, The Snowman was a worthless picture book that Briggs saw as a counterpoint to the murk of fungus, something he described as clean, pleasant, fresh, and wordless, and quick. However, when you think of the Snowman, you probably don't think of the book. This is because the animated TV adaptation instantly became an indelible part of British culture. The Snowman was first shown by Channel 4 on Boxing Day 1982, and was such a success that it was nominated for an Oscar. It is a testament to the power of the film that this fact, one that most animated shorts would brag about loudly, has largely been forgotten. Instead, we collectively clutch the Snowman to our hearts with such intensity that it is almost impossible to imagine life without it. It's a work of incredible beauty, hand-drawn and animated in such a way that it feels as if it could slip through your fingers at any moment. Lines blur, and shapes shift. The textures of the characters' clothes dance relentlessly. During a motorbike sequence, trees fly at the camera so quickly they become abstract. At times, it can feel hallucinogenic. And then, there is the song. Howard Blake's Walking in the Air is a pure and weightless daydream. It's the only point in the film where we hear a human voice, and it accompanies a spectacular sequence where a snowman and a boy fly to the North Pole. I'm old enough to remember the Snowman from the start, in the early 1980s, when my mum invariably made a big deal about the family watching it together. Over the years, it became a Christmas tradition, holding steady through the weird phases when it was introduced by David Bowie and Mel Smith. With repeated viewing comes familiarity and then, sadly, boredom. Something I've noticed, says the author, about people my age is that the Snowman became such a part of our culture that it was easy to mock. The sincerity of Walking in the Air, especially, made it an easy target for ridicule. Everyone comes back to it in the end, however. This is down to the Snowman's secret weapon, the precision with which it nails the low-humming sadness of Christmas. The snowman and boy have the adventure of a lifetime, but the next morning, the snowman has melted. In the final shot, the boy stands over a mound of slush, attempting to process his grief. There's no reassurance, no promise of a return. Everything you love will one day leave you. Merry Christmas. This element of a snowman gives it the unerring ability to change with you as you age. Watching it with my children now, with my mum no longer with us, the snowman somehow means more to me than when I was a child. This is why we'll still be watching it 50 years from now. The Snowman changed Christmas television too. Every year we are inundated with animated picture book adaptations where the melancholy is ramped up. Sometimes they work. Julia Donaldson's Stickman, about a stick who aches with loneliness. And sometimes less so. Michael Rosen's We're Going on a Bear Hunt, which was overlaid with a truckload of imported faux sincerity. But they can all be traced directly back to the Snowman. We might be in the grip of a scorching hot August. But don't be surprised if Channel 4 screens The Snowman in the next few days to commemorate all of Raymond Briggs' remarkable achievements. And don't be surprised if a ton of people watch it. Oh, the song Walking in the Air and the moment in which it was... it's just so beautifully choreographed, and the moment of the boy and the snowman, it's bringing me to tears just thinking about it. In fact, I shared it in the chat room on Christmas Eve and on FB as well, and it remains one of those songs that even thinking about it you can hear I'm welling up. Always cry whenever I listen to it. But there you go, that's the article there about Snowman. He also did Father Christmas too. He did Father Christmas. Did Raymond Briggs. Well, you know, what Father Christmas does in his days off. You know, he goes on holiday or whatever, and he's recognised everywhere. He can't really go anywhere because he's recognised everywhere. He's not left alone. It's a rather good book. And of course, Where the Wind Blows is the apocalyptic one, where it's an elderly couple who remember World War II and approach the coming World War III with a degree of nostalgia, and how that nostalgia is absolutely pummeled by the mushroom cloud. It's an incredibly harrowing read, but also a worthwhile one. Anyway, next, heading for Den of Geek. For something a little bit stranger. And it was authored by Laura Vickers Green. It was posted up on December 19th this year. And it's headlined Home Alone. Could anyone really survive those booby traps? So also those of us who watch the Home Alone films and you think, how the hell did they survive that? But anyway, excuse me, I've just got a blow my nose. And I'm back. So, yep, the Home Alone films are a festive feast of burglar baiting traps. A new documentary starring James Acaster and Guz Khan looks into the science of how, if at all, the wet bandits could have survived. I don't think they could, but anyway, carrying on. So, blowtorch to the head, electrocution, deadly tarantulas, flying paint cans. That Kevin McAllister really put those burglars through it in the Home Alone films. When you look back, it's a wonder they were kids' films at all. Generations of children watched those poor wet bandits get slowly, painfully tortured in their quest for Nicotelli and some loose change. But wouldn't real life Harry and Marv have survived the kinds of traps Kevin set them? That's exactly what the unofficial science of Home Alone, a new documentary on Sky Max, plans to find out. So comedians Guz Khan and James Acaster find out just how deadly the Home Alone booby traps are via experiments set up by engineer and scientist Dr. Zoe Laughlin, before coming up with savvy science-based ways to survive them. Then they'll put these theories to the test by taking on the stunts themselves in an attempt to catch their own adorable little Kevin McAllister. So what's the literal damage from five of the film's most memorable traps? So the first one is the blowtorch to the head. So with temperatures reaching a whopping 2,000 degrees Celsius, poor Harry would have suffered first-degree burns, necrosis or tissue death of the skull, and possible death. You need more than a little pile of snow to sort that out, mate. Next is the paint cans to face. Yeah, that's a bit of a painful one, that. It turns out that there's 3,000 kilograms of force behind those swinging paint tins, like a 3-ton van slamming into you, according to Dr. Zoe, which would have left the wet bandits with cracked skulls, brain damage, broken noses, severe whiplash, broken teeth, and our old friend likely death. At least they covered one of the above injuries in the film, with Harry's beloved gold tooth going missing. Electrocution is next, so poor stupid Marv and his big electrified skeleton face didn't stand a chance. He gets zapped with 240 volts, which in real life would cause cardiac arrest, severe skin burns, burnt internal organs, and probable death. Or, in the words of Dr. Zoe, what Marv experienced was enough electricity to kill someone. Happy Christmas! Red hot door handle. So Harry was probably asking for it after threatening to bite Kevin's fingers off one by one, but nonetheless this 326-degree red-hot doorknob probably caused secondary burns that destroyed epidermis and dermis, the top and middle layer of Harry's skin. In short, some serious ouchies. The zipline fall. So, yeah, as the saying goes, it's not the fall that kills you, it's the sudden stop at the end. And that's exactly Harry and Marv's problem is a... Apparently they'd have smashed into that wall with 14 tons of force. The result? Well, broken limbs, cracked ribs, punctured lungs, damaged internal organs, loss of teeth, cracked skull, and almost certain death. That might, though, have ended the film on a bit of a downer. So how could Harry and Marvin have swerved those fatal injuries if they'd been real-life bandits? Dr. Loughlin has some very interesting theories involving a baking tray, a nappy, some meat and more on tonight's documentary, which was on then on the 19th of December, although we'd probably just avoid burgling houses if we are honest. So, yeah, I don't know what the answers were on there. I'm going to see if there's any comments about it on the comments section. some of the comments here. Apparently people were saying it's a disappointing show. Science was meaningless and boring and poorly executed. It was dragged out 90 minutes shoe for 20 minutes of Alex doing good stuff and a bit of action at the end that made no sense. They didn't even do the last stunt. Well, they're probably trying to find something to do for Christmas, but I thought, yeah, I mean, it was one of these things at the time when you watch it. It's kind of, it's reminiscent to me of Tom and Jerry, really. And I think that's probably the approach they were going for, to be honest. Here we go. I'll just post this there in the chat room. And the next article. And I might have time for something else. So they might do the geek headlines. Maybe not. We'll see. I might just do something else. In fact, I know what I'm going to do if there's something else. If I've got time for it. Yeah. I've talked about it before, and every time I said these words, Brian would go, no! I'll tell you if I get time to get to it. But yeah, the next one is from Kotaku. It's put together by Ashley Barden, published on December 13th this year. So we're going into the world of gaming for this one. It's the 10 most stunning uses of snow in video games. Now, it's different from one I did about a couple of years back. Totally different one. They've ventured into other games for this. So I'm looking forward to this one. So the author says, I always liked the idea of snow more than shoveling it or letting it fall into my boots. When I lived in Western New York State, one of the snowiest places in the US, every snowdrift pressed against my front door or patch of slush I'd sink into my walk on my walk to school would make me huff white clouds into the freezing air. This, I'd think, again? I moved eventually and I didn't think I'd miss the snow. Western New York could keep its frozen sidewalks. But recently, the trees have been bare and brown. The idea of real, piled, unavoidable snow has been getting more persistent. I do miss it, and I've been finding solace in video games. There is a lot of wonderful video game snow. Billowing, twinkling, 8-bit, etc. All with their own distinctive character, style, and crunch. To me, video game snow is perfect for stoking cozy memories of flakes collecting across a window pane. Deep impressions made by your hands or hat when you drop it into a powdery mound, loose like piled sugar. So to help cultivate a wintry mood, as we get deeper into the season, but maybe miss the ones that have passed, I collected some of Kotaku's favourite instances of snow and paired them with a winter poem. So here we go. Make a start. So the first one is from Horizon Forbidden West, the Shearside Mountains. So completing 3 trials on Horizon Forbidden West's Shearside Mountains gives you rewards and a chance to step on some of its good fake snow. While other parts of the game offer thick piles to push through, and 2017's Horizon Zero Dawn had perfect sound effects, like crushing styrofoam in your hand, Shearside Mountains expose you to dusty flakes, forming a thin layer over the Black Mountain rock. It looks cold, but isn't cold enough to freeze any of the area's glistening creeks. Just enough to invigorate protagonist Aloy as she works on her hack and slashing. So the poem is a couple of lines from The Cold Earth Slept Below by Percy Bysshe Shelley. As a fen fire's beam on a sluggish stream gleams dimly, so the moon shone there. and it yellowed the strings of thy tangled hair that shook in the wind of the night. Next is Red Dead Redemption 2, Grizzlies West. So the stoic Grizzly Mountain region in Red Dead Redemption 2 is unforgiving, marked by steep cliffs, lonely trees, and sub-zero temperatures. It's an empty, angry place for cowboy protagonist Arthur Morgan to ride through. While you avoid turning the mountains pristine white red with his blood, you'll notice that Grizzlies West is particularly frosted, and you'll need to bulk up with heavy layered jackets and make it through its relentless grey. The line from the poem is from Blizzard by William Carlos Williams, which is "The man turns and there, his solitary track stretched out upon the world." Excuse me, I've just got to mute because I've got to blow my nose. Hold on. Back. Next one is Octopath Traveler for the Frostlands. Looking at the gleaming Frostlands in role-playing game Octopath Traveler is like looking into a small, shaken snow globe. The area's falling snow looks romantically like glitter, and everything is softened in despondent bluish light. Its original score, comprised of sweetly plodding piano and a melancholy viola, make its simple Arctic sparkle even more lovely. So the line is from the poem An Octopus by Marianne Moore, which is climbing like the thread, which forms a groove around a snail shell, doubling back and forth until where the snow begins, it ends. Next is Animal Crossing New Horizons, winter in general. So the Animal Crossing games always had some of my favourite snow, simple spheres gliding down like microscopic fairies. New Horizons times its seasons to yours, so playing the social sim in late December, when the game allows snow to collect on fruit trees like icing on a cinnamon bun, feels delightfully like your memories of winter are coming alive. And the line from the poem is from The Snow is Deep on the Ground by Kenneth Patchen. This is a good world. The war has failed. God shall not forget us. Who made the snow waits where love is. Next is Donkey Kong Country, the Snow Barrel Blast. So the 1994 platformer Donkey Kong Country Snow Barrel Blast level reminds me of a crisp Hudson River School painting, with tall evergreens and purple mountains ultimately obscured by an incoming blizzard. Its music can be surprisingly foreboding for a game where you throw a gorilla through the air to catch floating bananas, but the absurdity is made both sharper and more serious by its unsmiling environment. And the line from the poem is, Dusk in Drought, authored by Jory Graham, who has been quite a lot of these poets have been focuses on the Poetry Corner. A snow fell fast against our hurtling forwardness, all of it postcard, coloured shaggy trees flying by, us hoping for pitch black night and imagining the beauty of a journey with no return. Next is Witcher 3 Skellig. Hope I pronounced that correctly. So Skellig Isles, like Shearside, have fine mountain snow, also found sometimes invading patches of the archipelago's green forest. But in the game's bright mornings, and with its bittersweet orchestral score, the touch of snow is less an unwelcome guest, and more a break in texture, a suggestion that things can be different. And the line is from the poem Dust of Snow Coming Up by Robert Frost. The way a crow shook down on me the dust of snow from a hemlock tree has given my heart a change of mood. Coming up to the final few now. Frostpunk Everywhere is next. So the city in snow-soaked strategy game Frostpunk is surrounded by winter the way a hamper is covered in wrinkled fresh laundry. The game's air always looks heavy, frosty, and rooftops are caked in bulk snow. But you can never enjoy it. It menaces you. If you perform poorly, the inhospitable cold will kill the last city on Earth. Line from the poem The Wasteland by T.S. Eliot. Winter kept us warm, covering earth in a forgetful snow, feeding a little life with dried tubers. Next is Metroid Prime, the Fendrana Drifts. The Fendrana Drifts area in the 2002 action-adventure Metroid Prime makes me feel like I'm seeing the world from the perspective of an ice cube. It shades everything in a dull refrigerator blue. Its snow is uncomplicated, round white dots that seem to be suspended rather than falling down, and the flowery layer that sticks to the ground provides a soft landing pad for armoured Samus to gun down her enemies. The snow is secondary to the action, but it helps that it's there. And the line from the poem is, Snowflakes by Emily Dickinson. I counted till they danced so, their slippers leaped the town. And then I took a pencil to note the rebels down. Penultimate is Batman Arkham Knight Gotham City. So it starts snowing forever once you complete Batman Arkham Knight and activate the Nightfall Protocol, a quirk some players are conflicted about that I, personally, says the author, love. Arkham Knight's snow is soft but unobtrusive, tender when you watch it fall from the air, and light as it sticks and forms patchwork on the ground. It's city snow, a quiet reminder that nature takes over anywhere. And the poem line is from Midwinter Day by Bernadette Mayer, and it's, I keep that name, and I am not the same. The shadow of ice exchanges the colour of light. Love's figure to begin the absent night. And finally is Final Fantasy VII's introduction. So the beginning of 1994 role-playing game Final Fantasy VII shows Biggs and Wedge escorting the magical mind-controlled Terror to Nash, the city they plan to raid. Trio's march through the dark, snowy night is foreboding in this context, with snow providing both cover for impending bad behaviour and an appropriate chill. Sometimes snow is a spectre, cooling us and our memories. And the line is from W.S. Merwin's In the Winter of My 38th Year. Of course, there is nothing the matter with the stars. It is my emptiness among them, while they drift farther away in the invisible morning. So there you go. I don't know if I'm going to have time for this one. I have got that I'm looking at, which is a bit of a giggle. But it's one of those ones that every time I used to say it to Briar, he used to go, like that. Let's see if I've got time for it. I think it's quite a long one, actually. It's too long. So I won't be able to do that. What I'm going to do, though, is I'm going to have a look at the... see what the geek headlines are for today. Let's have a look. Let's have a look at the geek headlines. Well, there was a trailer, of course, yesterday as well. First 60th anniversary special trailer. And I was busy reading for Doctor Who, that is. And, there was predictably some incredibly irritating comments on the various sites, which I just think, are you lot watching the same show that I watch? For pity's sake. Anyway, yeah, I think we're going to do, the morning spoilers. Yeah, it's post. Oh, no, hang on, it's Fridays, is it? I don't know, I might be able to do this one. I might be able to do it. Let's have a look. Yeah, it's Friday's one. Did I look at that one or not? No, do you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to let you know about the Doctor Who 60th anniversary special trailer. I don't think I've got it covered. I don't think I'm going to be talking about it in later shows. I really don't think I am. I'll double check. I don't think I am. So I've sorted out all the shows for the week ahead today, you see. No, I don't think so. If I do, I'll just do something else. Doesn't matter. But yeah, from Gizmodo. Published yesterday. Also by Justin Carter. Doctor Who's first 60th anniversary special trailer decks the halls, and 10 Ant becomes 14 to celebrate 60 years of Doctor Who. So, yeah, come 2023, the BBC sci-fi series Doctor Who will be a whopping 60 years old. The network has spent months playing coy about what awaits in the 60th anniversary special, but it decided some kind of present was in order, hence the special's first trailer. So other than its big milestone, the big boast of the special is the first turn of David Tennant as the 14th Doctor after his sudden return at the end of Jodie Whittaker's final episode back in October. Looking as sprightly as ever and confused about the new old face he's wearing, he'll be joined by Catherine Tate again playing Donna Noble, the 10th Doctor's companion, who could be unlocking her memories of the Doctor, threatening her life. But the big newcomer for this trilogy of specials will be Neil Patrick Harris, looking for all intents and purposes like an old-timey inventor. So yeah, the three-part Doctor Who 60th anniversary special will air in November 2023, followed by the debut of Shooty Gap was 15th Doctor in 2024. So, excuse me, yeah, the trailer's pretty good. It's pretty good indeed. What's some of the biggest white elephant in the room, actually, is that, yeah, hang on a minute. Donna can regenerate. Which I assume then, I wonder where that leaves her daughter, to be honest. So there you go. I'll post those in the chat room. Well, the break's about to start, folks. So go and get yourselves a cup of tea, cup of coffee. I'll be back after the break with poems about the future in the pep talk segment. Cecilia Wallach is going to be the study in Poetry Corner, and then a couple of very quirky articles in the Prosaic Preoccupation segment. So I'll see you after the break.
Junkie, I won't say a goddamn word. Why? They won't understand. They won't understand why we do it. They won't understand it's about the men next to you. And that's it. That's all it is.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. Number one listener-supported radio, the printing press for freedom, at a time when freedom is needed the most.
Transcending time and space, let us take you to the place inside your mind where thoughts divide and mysteries unwind. Join us every Monday evening right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, and you will catch the Fenton Perspective with our great host, Lorian Fenton. Come listen in as she shares her amazing stories from the past to present, along with all of her guest secrets to the future. That's the Fenton Perspective every Monday evening right here from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, only on Revolution Radio. Oh, and you don't need to expect us. We're already here. We're already here.
Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm. As expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
Passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. But time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener supported radio station on the planet, not giving up. Revolution Radio. Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
Afternoon and welcome back to the second hour of the Monday, the 26th of December 2022 edition of Willow's World. My name is Willow Andreas, and also known as Sorry Sunflower, in the Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com chat room. And it's just turned 8 o'clock in the evening over here in the UK, which means it's just turned 3 o'clock in the afternoon over on the East Coast, 2 o'clock in the afternoon Central Time, 1 o'clock in the afternoon Mountain Time, midday over on the West Coast. In Australia, it's between 5 and 7 in the morning, and in New Zealand, it's 8 to 9 in the morning. But wherever you are in the world, I hope that life is being reasonably kind to you, that you're not allowing what is happening around the world to impact upon you too greatly. Please don't let it do that. Please don't let it do that. I'm just seeing so much heaviness and so much obsession with negativity, and it's just gloomy. It's very gloomy, and I really do wish that people would learn, as I mentioned at the start of the show, to take their heads out of the out of rabbit holes every so often and just see that there is still a lot of light around. But I don't know, I think I'm rapidly reaching the point where I'm thinking my message is not being listened to, and I don't know. perhaps it's the way I'm feeling. Perhaps it's the post-Christmas malaise. But, you know, you spend Christmas on, well, it's not great, but... But anyway, it's time for the pep talk segment. Time to cheer myself up. I'm going to take my own advice and lift myself up. No one else can do it but me. And today's pep talk segment is focusing on five poems about the future. There's only five today in this collection. And I'll probably have to stop at some point to blow my nose again. I've blown it twice during the break. But, this is from discoverpoetry.com. And the selection are This Was in the White of the Year by Emily Dickinson. Old and New by Ella Wheeler Wilcox. Today by Nixon Waterman. Foreboding by Ellen P. Allerton. And We Face the Future by Georgia Douglas Johnson. So anyway, folks, I can see you've settled yourselves down with the teas and coffees. Got your dishes of dainty delectables, you're all wrapped up. You've got your everything's cozy as it should be. Excuse me, I've just got to. Sorry about it, I didn't mean to snort on air. Hold on. Good grief. Well, we start with the first poem, which is This Was in the White of the Year by Emily Dickinson. This was in the white of the year. That was in the green. Drifts were as difficult then to think as daisies now to be seen. Looking back is best that is left. Or if it be before, retrospection is prospect's half, sometimes almost more. Next is Old and New by Ella Wheeler Wilcox. Long have the poets vaunted, in their lays, old times, old loves, old friendship, and old wine. Why should the old monopolize all praise? Then let the new claim mine. Give me strong new friends when the old prove weak, or fail me in my darkest hour of need. Why perish with the ship that springs a leak, or lean upon a reed? Give me new love, warm, palpitating, sweet, when all the grace and beauty leave the old. When like a rose it withers at my feet, or like a hearth grows cold. Give me new times, bright with a prosperous cheer, in place of old, tear-blotted, burdened days. I hold a sunlit present far more dear and worthy of my praise. When the old deeds are threadbare and worn through and all too narrow for the broadening soul, give me the fine, firm texture of the new, fair, beautiful, and whole. Next is Today by Nixon Waterman. We shall do so much in the years to come, but what have we done today? We shall give our gold in a princely sum, but what did we give today? We shall lift the heart and dry the tear. We shall plant a hope in the place of fear. We shall speak with words of love and cheer, but what have we done today? We shall be so kind in the afterwhile, but what have we been today? What shall bring? We shall bring to each lonely life a smile, but what have we brought today? We shall give to truth a grander birth, and to steadfast faith a deeper worth, We shall feed the hungering souls of Earth. But whom have we fed today? Penultimate is Foreboding by Ellen P. Allerton. I will not look for storms when skies are glowing, with hues of summer sunsets painted o'er. When all my tides of life are softly flowing, I will not listen for the breakers' roar. I will not search the future for its sorrows, nor peer ahead for lions in the way. I will not weep o'er possible tomorrows. Sufficient is the evil of today. And finally, As We Face the Future by Georgia Douglas Johnson. The hour is big with sooth and sign, with errant men at war, while blood of alien, friend and foe imbues the land afar. And we, with sable faces pent, move with the vanguard line, shod with the faith that springtime keeps, and all the stars opine. So I'll just share those there in the chat rooms. And I've got time for a little bit more, I think. Let's see what I've got. Let's just go where it flows today. Some poems here about living in the moment. So look at those, shall we? Bonus today. Actually, there's too many of them. It says there were five, but I'll do these another time. I think I said there were five poems on this one. I'll do those. I'll do these another time. Poems about fun. Yeah. Let's go with it. Poems about fun. Anonymously penned Coasting Down the Hill. Robert Louis Stevenson's The Hayloft. Annette Wynne's It's Fun to Have a Secret. And William Blake's Nurse's Song. So we'll start with the anonymously penned Coasting Down the Hill. Poems about fun. Frosty is the morning, but the sun is bright, flooding all the landscape with its golden light. Hark the sounds of laughter, and the voices shrill. See the happy children coasting down the hill. There are Tom and Charlie, and their sister Nell. There are John and Willie, Kate and Isabel. Eyes with pleasure beaming, cheeks with health aglow. Bless the merry children, trudging through the snow. Now I hear them shouting, "Ready, clear the track!" Down the slope they're rushing, now they're trotting back. Full of fun and frolic, thus they come and go. Coasting down the hillside, trudging through the snow. Next is Robert Louis Stevenson's The Hayloft. Through all the pleasant meadow side, the grass grew shoulder high, till the shining sides went far and wide and cut it down to dry. Those green and sweetly smelling crops they led in wagons home, and they piled them here in mountain tops for mountaineers to roam. Here is Mount Clear, Mount Rusty Nail, Mount Eagle and Mount High. The mice that in these mountains dwell, no happier are than I. Oh, what a joy to clamber there. Oh, what a place for play. But the sweet, the dim, the dusty air, the happy hills of hay. Next is Annette Wynne's It's Fun to Have a Secret. It's fun to have a secret and keep it very well, and meet a lot of people and never, never tell. It's fun to go walking all in the lane alone, and think about the secret that is really quite your own. And then when you have kept it very long, perhaps a day, it's fun to share the secret with another child at play. And then to have the secret and keep it very well, until it's time the secret's out And then at last, they tell. And finally is, from this selection anyway, is William Blake's Nurse's Song. Excuse me if you can hear me scratching my head. When the voices of children are heard on the green and laughing is heard on the hill, my heart is at rest within my breast and everything else is still. Then come home, my children, the sun is gone down and the dews of the night arise. Come, come, leave off play and let us away till the morning appears in the skies. No, no, let us play, for it is yet day, and we cannot go to sleep. Besides, in the sky the little birds fly, and the hills are all covered with sheep. Well, well, go and play till the light fades away, and then go home to bed. The little ones leaped and shouted and laughed, and all the hills echoed. Given I've got a little bit more time. Yeah, I've got a little bit more time before I venture into the Poetry Corners topic in about a minute. Let's have a look and see if there's anything here that grabs my attention, shall we? Passion poems. Oh, there's one. We'll finish with this one. The Passionate Shepherd to His Love by Christopher Marlowe. Come live with me and be my love, and we will all the pleasures prove that valleys, groves, hills and fields, woods or steepy mountain yields. And we will sit upon the rocks, seeing the shepherds feed their flocks by shallow rivers to whose falls melodious birds sing madrigals. And I will make thee beds of roses with a thousand fragrant posies, a cap of flowers and a kirtle embroidered all with leaves of myrtle, a gown made of the finest wool which from our pretty lambs we pull, fair lined slippers for the cold with buckles of the purest gold, a belt of straw and ivy buds with coral clasps and amber studs. And if these pleasures may thee move, come live with me and be my love. The shepherd swains shall dance and sing for thy delight each May morning. If these delights thy mind may move, then live with me and be my love. There we go. I'll just share these in the chat rooms. Just got to mute a moment. I've got a blow my nose. Hold on. Sorry, it took a bit longer than usual. So, today, in the Poetry Corner, you're all settled anyway. You're all comfortable. I can see that. We are returning to the worlds of 20th and 21st century American poetry for a study of one of its most explorative of literary talents. She was born in 1956 in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Her name is Cecilia Wallach, and that's how her surname is pronounced. I checked the pronunciation, always do before the shows, because I like to make sure I get these names right. And again, I've not really heard of Cecilia Wallach, but I'm glad I've done this research today. I'll be starting as I normally do with the opening paragraph from her Wikipedia page, which is literally only a couple of lines long. Then I'll be heading to Poetry Foundation for their bio of Cecilia Wallach, and then concluding with a selection of her poems from poemhunter.com. But Cecilia Wallach was born 1956. She's an American poet, writer and teacher, known for her work in communities throughout the US and around the world. She's a National Endowment for the Arts Fellowship recipient, the author of 6 collections of poems, a novel, and numerous essays. I'll just share that there in the chat room so you've got, you can read through and you've got an idea of what she's all about. But you can find her on, you can find her very easily on Wikipedia or online. You know, her details about her. So, to the Poetry Foundation's bio, born in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania and raised in rural Kentucky, poet Cecilia Wallach earned a BA at Transylvania University and an MFA at Antioch University, Los Angeles. She's the author of several poetry collections, including Saigon, the Gypsy Poem, republished, I think, in 2018 and was originally published in 2002, Carpathia from 2009, Late from 2003, and Sacrifice from 1997. Her poetry has been translated into several languages and included in numerous anthologies, such as An Introduction to the Prose Poem from 2009, Best American Erotic Poems from 1800 to the Present, which was published in 2008, and 180 More Extraordinary Poems for Everyday Use from 2005. Former U.S. Poet Laureate Ted Kooser has included her work in his syndicated newspaper column American Life in Poetry. Recent study here in the Poetry Corner was Ted Kooser. So influenced by Anna Akhmatova, W.S. Merman and Walt Whitman, Wallach writes lyrical poems of witness and exploration. Many of Wallach's poems arise from her extensive travels, and in an interview with Web del Sol, she stated, "When I'm in a place that's really strange to me, when I don't know the language or the customs or the geography that surrounds me, I feel more self-contained, more a sense that my home is within myself. At the same time, there's more of a sense of just being part of a sea of humanity, a way that those barriers, language, culture and borders, seem to dissolve." Wallach's honours include fellowships from the Fulbright Foundation, the National Endowment for the Arts, the California Arts Council, Chateau de la Napoule Retreat for Artists, and the Isaac W. Bernheim Foundation. She's collaborated with painter John Weber and choreographer Anna Leo. The founding director of the Paris Poetry Workshop and Summer Poetry in Idlewild, Wallach has also taught at the University of Southern California, Western Connecticut State University, Georgia College and State University, the Western Connecticut State University MFA program in writing, New England College MFA program in poetry, and the summer program at Sichuan University in China. And she is based in Los Angeles. So there's not an awful lot to, about her, really, that I could find. But I've got plenty of time for her poetry today, which I'm going to share in the chat rooms as I'm going. I think we'll go for the ones in poetry, in the Poetry Foundation, or the links on the Poetry Foundation page first, I think. So the first one is Anniversary, which is from Narcissus. "Didn't I stand there once, white-knuckled, gripping the just-lit taper, swearing I'd never go back? And hadn't you kissed the rain from my mouth? And weren't we gentle and awed and afraid, knowing we'd stepped from the room of desire into the further room of love? Wasn't it sacred, the sweetness we licked from each other's hands? And were we not lovely then? Were we not as lovely as thunder and damp grass and flame?" In the chat room. And the next is My Mother's Pillow, which is from Late. "My mother sleeps with the Bible open on her pillow. She reads herself to sleep and wakens startled. She listens for her heart. Each breath is shallow. For years, her hands were quick with thread and needle. She used to sew all night when we were little. Now, she sleeps with a Bible on her pillow and believes that Jesus understands her sorrow. Her children grown, their father frail and brittle. She stitches in her heart, her breathing shallow. Once she even slept fast, rushed tomorrow, mornings full of sunlight, sons and daughters. Now she sleeps alone with the Bible on her pillow, and wakes alone and feels the house is hollow, though my father in his blue room stirs and mutters. She listens to him breathe. Each breath is shallow. I flutter down the darkened hallway, shadow between their dreams, my mother and my father. Asleep in rooms I pass, my breathing shallow. I leave the Bible open on her pillow. In the chat rooms. Well, chat room. Then the pic from when she named fire. And also sacrifice. I watched him swinging the pick in the sun, breaking the concrete steps into chunks of rock, and the rocks into dust, and the dust into earth again. I must have sat for a very long time on the split rail fence, just watching him. My father's body glistened with sweat. His arms flew like dark wings over his head. He was turning the backyard into terraces, breaking the hill into two flat plains. I took for granted the power of him, though it frightened me too. I watched as he swung the pick into the air and brought it down hard and changed the shape of the world. And changed the shape of the world again. And I've got time for a few more. On faith. This is from a selection on Poem Hunter. How do people stay true to each other? When I think of my parents all those years in the unmade bed of their marriage, not ever longing for anything else, or, no, they must have longed. There must have been flickerings, stray desires, nights she turned from him, sleepless and wept. Nights he rose silently, smoked in the dark. Nights that nest of breath and tangled limbs must have seemed not enough. But it was. Or they just held on. A gift, perhaps, I've tossed out, having been always too willing to fly to the next love, the next, and the next. Certain nothing was really mine. Certain nothing would ever last. So faith hits me late, if at all. Faith that this latest love won't end, or ends in the shapeless sleep of death. But faith is hard. When he turns his back to me now, I think. Disappear. I think. Not what I want. I think of my mother lying awake in those arms that could crush her. That could have. Did not. I've got time for a couple more. Postcard to I. Kaminsky from a dream at the edge of the sea. By Cecilia Wallach. I was leaving a country of rain for a country of apples. I hadn't much time. I told my beloved to wear his bathrobe, his cowboy boots, a black patch like a pirate might wear over his sharpest eye. My own bags were full of salt, which made them shifty, hard to lift. Houses had fallen, face first into the mud at the edge of the sea. Hurry, I thought, and my hands were like birds. They could hold nothing. A feathery breeze. Then a white tree blossomed over the bed, all white blossoms, a painted tree. Oh, I said, all my love said to me. We want to be human, always, again, so we knelt like children at prayer while our lost mothers hushed us. A halo of bees. I was dreaming as hard as I could dream. It was fast. How the apples fattened and fell. The country that rose up to meet me was sleep as a mirror. The gold hook gleamed. And I think I've got time for... Oh, excuse me. Just scratching my head. Self-pity. So few birds I know by name. Blue jay, cardinal, sparrow, crow, pigeon and pigeon and pigeon again. This morning I woke to the thump of soft breast, frantic wings against glass. A female robin, I thought, confused, mistaking her own reflection for some other enemy bird, launching herself from the limb of a dying tree outside my window toward the ghost limb. There, not there. My sister calls all birds suicidal. Our mother sits in her big green chair, too weary even to talk on the phone. All afternoon it's rained and rained. All the damp world weeping. So I've thought self-pity stinks, my mother says and says. You should see me naked now. Her body a map of the broken world through which I slipped and my sister once. Well, I would eat ash if I thought it could bring back the dead, or my own youth, or anyone's. Nothing gets done around here. We complain. But I've learned a few trees by heart. Here is my sycamore. Mother, sister. Here is the branch I have loved, like an arm. And that concludes today's Poetry Corner. Just going to blow my nose a moment. Hold on. I'm back. So, enjoying the next installment now of Willow's Prosaic Preoccupations. Got two articles today. First is from Big Think, authored by Scotty Hendricks. It was posted up on September 30th this year. And it's headlined, Seven Great But Notoriously Hard to Finish Books. So these hard to finish books are still worth the effort. So key takeaways from this article is A Brief History of Time by Stephen Hawking sold 25 million copies, but few people actually read most of it. Many highly regarded books are simply difficult to read for various reasons. So here we consider seven notoriously hard to finish books
that are worth the extra effort. So certain books are better known for being hard to finish rather than widely read. While taking the time to sit down and work through a difficult book can be a big ask, the rewards for doing so are often great. Furthermore, the experience of absorbing great literature or learning from a heavy tome can be a prize in and of itself. Today, we'll look at 7 famously difficult books and why you should read them anyway. And we start off with A Brief History of Time. It's a quote here. The whole history of science has been the gradual realization that events do not happen in an arbitrary manner, but that they reflect a certain underlying order, which may or may not be divinely inspired. Stephen Hawking's best-selling book on cosmology dives into the history of human understanding of the universe, explains our current models for how everything works, and discusses the areas where physics is going in an accessible and witty manner. While covering some esoteric topics, the book famously contains only a single mathematical equation, E equals mc squared. Despite selling 25 million copies, the book is a namesake for the Hawking Index, a not entirely scientific measure of how much of a book people will read before quitting. The index measures the 5 most highlighted portions in the Amazon Kindle version of the book for how close they are to the beginning. The idea is that the closer these are to the beginning, the less likely it is that most readers make it to the end of the book. Hawking's book scores 6.6 on the index, suggesting that most who pick it up never finish or even get close to finishing it. I haven't, I have to say. Those who do finish it not only get to enjoy Dr. Hawking's famed wit, but also come to understand how human reason has evolved and, with it, our conception of our place in the universe. If that's not a good reason to finish a book, then what is? Next is 100 Years of Solitude. And we open with a quote. Many years later, as he faced the firing squad, Colonel Orellano Buendia was to remember that distant afternoon when his father took him to discover ice. The multi-generational story The Buendia Family of Macondo, Colombia, penned by Gabriel Garcia Marquez, has sold 50 million copies and can be read in dozens of languages. It is considered the masterpiece of its author and one of the best works of literature to come out of Latin America. The book has a complex storyline and is open to several interpretations of its central themes. It provides both a linear plot and alternative ways of looking at how time functions for the various characters. The magical realism gives us both fantastical events in a fictional town alongside real events influencing a family history, which can be confusing for those unfamiliar with the genre. However, the book has earned its praise for a reason. Pulitzer Prize winner William Kennedy went so far as to say it should be required reading for the entire human race. Next is Ulysses. Starts with a quote, which is, "Love loves to love love." A classic of modernist literature that follows a man around Dublin on a typical day, Ulysses by James Joyce is one of a go-to examples of a literary masterpiece that is terribly difficult to read while also being held in high regard by those who manage to do it. The book is written in a stream of consciousness style, perhaps the best example of it there is, that can be difficult and tiring to work through if you are unprepared. It's also a long text, coming in at 265,222 words. Average novel is less than half of that. The shifting styles of writing that reflect the changing states of mind of the main characters can also be confusing. Ulysses, by virtue of its stream of consciousness style, gives us a look into the lives of its characters as they are lived rather than just how they are observed. In addition, the richness of the connections between different parts of the text and its allusions to other works helps give it a sense of wholeness, making the reader feel like they have a connection to places and events that they have only seen through the character's eyes. But if you can't finish it, don't feel too bad. British author Virginia Woolf, who used Stream of Consciousness herself, got 200 pages in and then decided she couldn't be bothered to get through the rest. Next is Catch-22. Starts with quotes. "They don't have to show us Catch-22," the old woman answered. "Law says they don't have to." "What law says they don't have to?" "Catch-22." Novel written by Joseph Heller about a US Army Air Corps bombardier during the Italian campaign in World War II, Catch-22 explores a madness inherent in every bureaucracy, the comedy found inside every tragedy, and the paradoxes that every life includes that cannot be addressed by logic alone. The novel is a direct source for the term Catch-22, a situation in which contradictory rules prevent a resolution, and the inspiration for the term black comedy, which was first used to describe the novel. The book is famously confusing with opaque language, an extremely non-linear plot, and story elements that alternate between highly grounded, bizarre, and horrific with great speed. Despite this, Harper Lee, author of To Kill a Mockingbird, said that Catch-22 was the only war novel she had ever read that made sense. It's also hilarious and can help readers come to terms with absurdity and moral greyness in their own lives. Next is Les Misérables. Quote, "If we would take a little pains, the nettle would be useful. We neglect it, and it becomes harmful. Then we kill it. How much men are like the nettle? My friends, remember this, that there are no weeds and no worthless men. There are only bad farmers." Written by Victor Hugo, this is the tale of Jean Valjean, a group of young revolutionaries, a young girl named Cosette, and a determined policeman who views the world in black and white as they navigate life in France as it transitions out of the post-revolutionary era. The text is a massive 545,925 words, and much of the book is unconnected to the main plotline. These chapters contain discussions on topics such as monasteries, architecture, French history, and the Parisian sewer system. The many choose instead to watch one of the movie versions, which can still be up to 5 hours long, is unsurprising. Despite the length of the text and sections that are so disconnected from the plot that even Hugo names the chapters parentheses, the full version of the book rewards any reader willing to consider every chapter. The subjects covered apply to humanity at all times in all places, while the questions raised almost certainly bother the reader as much as they do the characters. Now, I've just got to mute a moment because I'm going to blow my nose. I think we're approaching the end now. The Tale of Genji is next. A quote from it. Or Genji. I think it's Genji. "No art or learning is to be pursued half-heartedly," His Highness replied. "And anywhere art worth learning will certainly reward more or less generously the effort made to study it." Authored by Murasaki Shikibu, this is a story exploring the lives of the members of the Japanese imperial court and has a claim to being the first novel ever written. Tracing the fall of a prince as he is demoted to a member of the common rabble, this book gives us an in-depth look at a world long vanished. The original text that we have, part of which appears to be lost, is in a long-dead version of classical Japanese. It is only in modern times that translations of the text into contemporary Japanese and English have given the book a wider audience. The original text does not name the characters, expects the reader to fully understand 11th century Japanese poetry, and has so many homophones that many readers are left unable to understand what's going on. A attempts to translate the work must balance faithfulness to the original text with a desire for readability. Tightrope walk that often satisfies no one. For those who find the translation they like, the book not only provides an inside account of classical Japan, but also a sense of how the medium of the novel has evolved over the last 1,000 years. And the final book is Capital in the 21st Century. And it starts with a quote, which is, to put it bluntly, the discipline of economics has yet to get over its childish passion for mathematics. An examination of modern capitalism through history and political economy lenses. Capital in the 21st Century by Thomas Piketty set off a firestorm of debate when it was first published in 2013. In the years since its publication, a number of follow-up books, including some by Dr. Piketty himself, have explored the foundations and implications of his text's fundamental thesis, namely that returns on investments are higher than wages and likely will continue to be. The book can be a bit dense for those who have not studied economics. It scores even lower in the Hawking Index than A Brief History of Time, coming in at 2.4%. It is nearly 600 pages long and covers economic history, an infamously dry subject. However, the book still has the power to help readers understand modern economic and social problems and can provide a course in the history of modern economics, economies rather. While Dr. Piketty has tempered the positive reception of the book and the theory put forward in it by reminding us of how messy economics can be, it remains a vital tool for understanding the world we live in. Sorry, I just had to mute there. So there you go, I'll just share that there in the chat room. Oh, I haven't read Finnegan's Wake yet either. There's quite a few of these I haven't yet read. So, the next article. It's a little bit of fun. I might have time for something else as well. I'm really hoping to get through this. I'm feeling really sort of right now. This is from Londonist. And sorry if you could hear some noise in the background there. I'm not sure who wrote this article, but it's a 200-year-old pun fest on London street names. I'll do the best I can with this one. Ever made a joke about Cheapside or Little Britain? As this 200-year-old article shows, you're not the first. Mr. Editor, I beg to offer to your notice a plan for the classification of the tradespeople of London. So opens a letter to the editor of the Quizzical Gazette of 27th of August 1831. The correspondent's wheeze is to place various tradespeople on streets with the most appropriate name. So, bakers should open premises on Doughty Street, Millman Street, Bread Street or Baker Street. Soldiers should lodge on Artillery Lane or Cannon Street. So here we go. Let's start, shall we? So let's see. There's some examples here. Actors should dwell in Playhouse Street or anywhere behind the curtain, Long Acre. Aldermen, Corporation Row, Aldermansbury or City Road. Bakers, as mentioned, Doughty Street, Millman Street, Bread Street or Baker Street. Blacking makers, whatever that was. Shoe Lane, Blackman Street, Hunter Street, Warren Street, Leather Lane. Oh, shoe, okay, to do with shoes. Brewers, Beer Lane or Brewer Street. Bricklayers, Lime Street, Brick Lane, London Wall or near the Mansion House. Butchers should live on Oxford Street, Cleveland Street or Lambeth Cut. Carpenters, Wood Street, Tooley Street, Good Street, Chisel Street or Manchester Square. Carters should live in Horsley Down or Carter Street. Cheesemongers and egg merchants should live in Gloucester Place, Dorset Street, Eggleton Street, Bacon Street or Tottenham Court Road. Children should live in Little Britain, Lad Lane, Maiden Lane, Bloomsbury Square or Minories. Clergymen should live in Bishopsgate Street, Dean Street, Parsons Street, Holywell Street or Grace Church Street. Cobblers, Shoe Lane, Leather Lane, or Shoemaker's Lane. Dandies, Bow Street, Euston Square, Mincing Lane, or Hayden Square. Doctors, Long Acre, St. John's Street, Camomile Street, Doctors Commons, or Montague Street. And Fishmongers, Crawford Place, Ely Place, Fish Street Hill, or Pickle Herring Street. So the writer seems not to realise that this is how many of the streets got their names in the first place. Bread Street was indeed the home of medieval bakers, Milk Street for dairy sales, and so on. But no matter, it's still fascinating to see someone from two centuries ago thinking about local street names in this way. Excuse me a minute. Sorry about that. Just had to mute a moment to blow my nose. So, yeah, some of the allocations are ingenious. Children could be housed on Minories, butchers on Lambeth Cut, dandies on Bow Street, and gardeners on Grafton Street. So many of the entries take a bit of thought. Why might a doctor practice from Longacre? Oh, hang on. Yeah, I'm trying to think of that one. Longacre. Okay, it'll come to me in a bit. Undertakers on Pall Mall? Yes. Ah, yes, pall bearers. Yes. So here's some more. Gamblers should live on Chancery Lane, Sackville Street or Windmill Street. Gardeners, Grafton Street, Crabtree Row, Pear Tree Row, Rose Lane or Gravel Street. Good people on Wentworth Street or Goodman's Fields. Great people should live on High Street, Noble Street, King Street, Queen Street, Prince's Street, Duke Street or Earl Street. Hatters should live on Felton Street, Hatton Garden or Hatfield Street. Horse dealers, Hunter Street, Mount Street, Giltspur Street, Bolton Street or Horsley Down. Lovers should live on Love Lane or Union Street. Milkmen, Cowcross, Smithfield or Milk Street. Money dealers should live on Golden Lane, Bankside, Bond Street, Tavistock Square or Sloane Street. MPs should live on Borough, Charing Cross, Constitution Hill, Rosses Row, or Parliament Street. Yeah, I can see what they thought of MPs even then. Old people should live on Theobald's Row, Old Jewry, Paternoster Row, or Crutched Friars. Painters, Gray's Inn Lane, Red Lion Street, Blackman Street, Green Street, or Whitechapel. Poets should live on Hungerford Buildings, Lombard Street, Garrett Street, or Paper Buildings. Sailors should live in Blue Anchor Road, Cable Street, Fore Street, Seaford Place, Newport Street or Waterloo Road. Sempstresses, Spencer Street, Threadneedle Street or Cloth Fair. Soldiers, Artillery Place, Cannon Street, Beaufort Buildings, Leadenhall Street or Tower Street. Tallow Chandlers should be Howick Place, Brunswick Street or Berners Street. Tapsters, Barbican, Liquor Pond Street, Philpot Lane or Swallow Street. Thieves, Fetter Lane, Coventry Street or Turnmill Street. Undertakers, Belgrave Square, Bloomsbury or Pall Mall. Upholsterers, Charing Cross, Bedford Square or Wood Street. Women, Virginia Street, Maiden Lane, Queen Anne Street, Catherine Street or Martha Street. Wine merchants, Portland Place, Portugal Row or Sackville Street. So others require a bit of historical insight. Why would a maker of blacking or shoe polish trade from Warren Street? Warren's was the leading brand of blacking in the early 19th century and a household name. It's remembered today of this factory in which a 12-year-old Charles Dickens was sent to work in the 1820s. Turnmill Street, meanwhile, is listed as a haunt of thieves, not for any flourish of wordplay, but presumably because it was indeed a notorious haunt of thieves. Still others elude me, but why put gamblers on Windmill Street, dandies in Euston Square, or carpenters on Good Street? I think we can all agree that MPs belong on Rotten Row, however. So, short-lived Quizzical Gazette was a remarkable publication for its time, packed with wit and observation. It hoped to, in a good-humoured way, make men laugh at their own pleasant errors. So, according to an appeal for submissions, the periodical wanted bon mots, repartees, double entendres, innuendos, puns, jokes, comical ideas, etc., etc. Sadly, not all the content lived up to the quality of the street list. Among its pages, we also found this, which we believe to be the worst joke ever written. I'm not even going to bother reading it. It's that bad. I'll post it in the chat room. But yeah, you can still read it on Google Books.
And you can find it on victorianlondon.org as well. But anyway, we're coming up to the end of the show now. Made it through. So I'm going to hand you over now to Mr. Rowe for Crypto Corner. We've got plenty going on both studios tonight and also the Hawk's Nest as well. And I'll be back with you on Thursday with more Willow's World at 2 p.m. Eastern here on Studio A. So all take care. You have a lovely couple of days. Hopefully I'll sound a bit better on Thursday. But I'll see you then. You take care.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Don't miss the Crypt Rick and Jonathan Show every Saturday, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Studio B, right here at Revolution Radio.
The journey begins to fun, health, and freedom.
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it, then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning! Warning!
We gotta stop them! They're gonna kill us all!
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone, or human beings!
A time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part. You can't even pass.